from WCVB Channel 5 Podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Welcome to this edition of the Take 5 Podcast. Today's guest, Michael Lee of The Washington Post. His beat is the intersection of sports and society. This is a time when a lot of people are feeling the pull of civic engagement, and athletes are no different, especially in light of the events at the Capitol, which were gripping and scary for a lot of us. Athlete activism has been a big story in sports the last year, and I don't think it's going anywhere. And you really can't get away from what's happening in the country and politics. Sports and politics inextricably linked at this point in our nation's history. But we all could use a little bit of a break. The lighter side of sports, the lighter side of life. And that's why Nickelodeon was here this weekend, and we had Ellen watching it as they broadcast the NFL wildcard game between the Bears and the Saints. And it seems like they have one convert, Ellen.
Well, thankfully for this team, I was doing the real job Sunday, and that was watching the Saints and Bears play their wildcard weekend game on Nickelodeon, which is history in the making. While we're speaking about history being made, it was electric, to say the least. I felt like a kid again. I felt like I could do anything. Anything was possible. The world wasn't weighing me down. You know, it's everything Nickelodeon can be and more. Now, you didn't catch it.
I did not. And I also didn't know Nickelodeon was a guiding light for our democracy, but apparently it is.
Neither did I, but here we are, and it is. Every time there was a touchdown, there were slime cannons that went off. And I don't care if you have kids at home or you don't have kids at home, whatever, you need to be watching the next time it's on Nickelodeon, because it was amazing to see these players. They put on cartoon eyeballs on these players. I found out what people's favorite ice cream flavors were. Young Sheldon was popping up. He was telling me what Holden meant. Like, it was amazing.
Interesting.
We had Tommy Pickles out there.
So, like, how many touchdowns did the Roadrunner score?
The Roadrunner is not Nickelodeon.
It's a cartoon.
Okay. Speaking of cartoons, they were in the stands. We had Tommy Pickles. We had SpongeBob. We had Paw Patrol. We had Ninja Turtles were out there watching the game. And this is the kind of unity that not only I like to see, but the unity we need.
Now we could all take a page from Nickelodeon. So that's cool. A little bit of levity. I think we needed that as a country. So thank you to Nickelodeon. I will say we had a great discussion with Michael Lee. I think the upshot here is that athlete activism is not going anywhere when it comes to social justice initiatives, when it comes to political causes, and when it comes to human rights. And ultimately, I think that's a good thing. Our discussion with Michael Lee is next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, now, as promised, we're joined by Michael Lee of The Washington Post here on the Take 5 podcast. Michael is a sports enterprise reporter for The Post. He focuses on the intersection of gender, diversity, and how sports shape our society. He's also covered the NBA for a long, long time. Michael, thanks for joining us here on the Take 5 pod.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure. So you know the league really well, and I think you have a great role here at The Washington Post. What do you think the NBA's reaction has been to the events at the Capitol last Wednesday, the Trump supporters turning violent, turning into a violent mob, and basically invading the Capitol?
Well, I think the prevailing thought from a lot of the players that echoed, you know, throughout the entire, or ever since, is just the double standard and the hypocrisy. You know, a lot of these players were involved with peaceful protests throughout last summer after George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And all they were doing was just asking for equality. All they were doing was just asking for the country to live up to, you know, what it says it's all about. And then you have another group that really has been given everything that could ever ask for in this country and is entitled to just about every freedom possible, yet feels that it's being oppressed for reasons that are only clear to them. I think that's sort of the disappointing thing for a lot of players, is that, you know, you see the double standard and you also feel the helplessness, because you can raise awareness, you can speak on it, you can make comments and express, you know, some of the things you've dealt with, and have the country completely ignore it and dismiss it, while you have some people who really aren't being oppressed in any way whatsoever decide to storm the Capitol and threaten to take people's lives in one of the scariest scenes we've ever seen. So I just think there's just a lot of disappointment, a lot of frustration. When you couple that with the decision from the Kenosha district attorney that they weren't going to prosecute the officers who shot Jacob Blade in the back, I just think it just sort of sends home the message that there are two Americas, and no matter how much money you make, it doesn't shield you from the reality.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it was Dr. Martin Luther King who said about the two Americas, and both LeBron James and Jaylen Brown echoed that in their comments in the wake of this event.
It's we live in two Americas, and that was prime example of that yesterday. And if you don't understand that or don't see that after seeing what you saw yesterday, then you really need to take a step back, not even just one step, maybe four or five or even 10 steps backwards.
Before we get started, you know, we definitely want to speak to some of the things that's been going on in our society. It reminds me of what Dr. Martin Luther King has said, that there is two split different Americas. In one America, you get killed by sleeping in your car, selling cigarettes, or playing in your backyard. In another America, you get to storm the Capitol, and no tear gas, no massive arrests, no none of that. So I think it's obvious. It's 2021. I don't think anything has changed. We want to still acknowledge that. We want to still push for the change that we look at. But as of yet, we have not seen it.
I think that when you look at that, it's unavoidable, really, the double standard when it comes to displaying your displeasure with our democracy. You look at what happened over the summer with the Black Lives Matter protests, which were about human rights. It's not even a political issue. It's not the same as saying, you know, I don't believe in the integrity of this election, or I'm mad because my person didn't win. No, that's a human rights issue, saying we deserve to be treated equally under the law, which is what the law is supposed to be. They're met with armed, militarized police. And as you mentioned, Trump supporters are able to storm the Capitol, and they're not met with anywhere near the same resistance. And I think one thing to me that drove home, Michael, and I think it's driven it home, and you touched on it for a lot of these NBA players, is that when players, any athletes really sort of speak out about these issues that affect them and affect their communities, I feel like the rush is to say, we'll stick to sports. And that is such a dehumanizing response. You don't cease to be a citizen the moment you put on a uniform. And you're absolutely right in terms of the idea that I think this really drove home to a lot of players and a lot of athletes, the idea that in the entertainment they provide, in the competition that they thrive on and really enjoy, it allows a segment of this country to look at them and say, you're not a citizen like me, and sort of treat them in a way where they're just objects there to entertain.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to, you know, the Spike Lee classic movie, Do the Right Thing, where, you know, he's asking the guy to name his favorite musician. He loves Eddie Murphy. You know, he loves, you know, all these black athletes. And, you know, and so it's like, yeah, but they're different. And I think that's sort of been the way that a lot of sports fans have been able to classify athletes from this time. Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, you know, because he gave them a hero, you know. And I think that a lot of things happened from Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier. You know, the military was integrated a year later. Brown versus Board of Education came 7 years later. And of course, the civil rights movement came within 20 years of that. So, you know, we saw a lot of change coming just from seeing a black face. But I think that now athletes are with social media and just being more aware and having more, you know, access to information, they're tired of it, of just being seen as like different. They know that some of the privileges they have now because of their wealth and their fame is not the same for their family members or their friends or the people that are from their communities where they come from. They understand that they've had special treatment there pretty much their entire life. The minute somebody realized that they had athletic gifts and the rest of their friends were left behind, they understand that. But I think it says a lot about, you know, the integrity of a lot of these athletes that they haven't given up. You know, I think you saw it with the election where you saw WNBA players, you know, where they were attacked by Kelly Loeffler, you know, for saying that she didn't support the Black Lives Matter movement. They took that personally, you know, because here they are going to a bubble. And at the time, there's an owner from their sports league saying that Black lives don't matter to her, or that this whole movement should, the WNBA shouldn't be behind. And that was hurtful. And they didn't just try to say, hey, we're going to remove you from the WNBA. They're like, how can we really hurt you? we will take you out of the Senate. But then you look at LeBron James with more than a vote. The fact that he had a Barack Obama that he could call while they're in the bubble and they're trying to figure out what to do after their protests. You know, these players know that, you know, they can step up and make change. You know, it's cool to see athletes on the streets marching. I think it's admirable and you can applaud that. But these athletes, a lot of times, have access to people in power positions who can make decisions and get things done that people on the street just can't.
Yeah, they use their influence the same way that maybe a Wall Street banker would, or that somebody like Mark Zuckerberg, they have a certain level of influence and access.
Yeah, they have access. I mean, you take it to the streets because you can't take it to the, you know, the courthouse or the state house, right? But if you can actually get on the phone or just go into a congressman's, you know, room, because they're aware of you. You're a celebrity. You're famous. There's power in that. And I think that you saw it from like a Patrick Mahomes, you know, who was able to get Arrowhead Stadium to, he was able to put his own money behind it becoming a voting precinct. You know, you saw it with like even a guy like Paul Millsap, who had a gym in DeKalb County, and he was able to turn that into a precinct, and it turned out to be one of the larger voting areas for DeKalb County. Wow. And so these are individual things that players are doing, and to try to, you know, show that, you know, their power goes beyond just the playing field.
So I want to get to the WNBA in a second here, and Ellen has some questions on that. But I want to ask you this, because you've covered the league for a long time. Do you see a change in this generation of players, or is it just with social media that we're more aware of what they're doing in terms of social activism? You know, I'm of an age where I remember, you know, Michael Jordan not jumping in to the election against Jesse Helms in North Carolina, who is or was really a segregationist senator, had a terrible record on race relations, and he did not jump into that Senate race or really participate. In the famous line, whether he said it or not, that's attributed to him as, well, Republicans buy shoes too. Do you sense this is a different generation of NBA players? And I'm not saying they're the first, but is there something different about this current generation than maybe the generation or two before them?
Yeah. One, I think it's sort of accepted that players are going to speak out. It's sort of expected now. If you are silent, then why aren't you saying anything? What's wrong with you? And I think that comes from the fact that LeBron James is the most popular player in the sport. I think in the past, the league may not have been as open to this, but that all changed once Trayvon Martin was killed. You know, you got to realize, you know, George Zimmerman, you know, gunned him down on the night of the All-Star game. You know,
oh, I didn't know that.
And yeah, there that night, that's he was watching the game with his dad. He went out to go get some Skittles and some tea, you know. And so when the word got back to the players, they were hit by that because they look at Trayvon Martin as themselves. And you know, and I think that started the whole movement. And I think the fact that so many of these incidents are captured on camera, you know, you can't deny it anymore. You know, I think for my generation, you know, seeing the Rodney King video, probably the first time you actually saw something like that and it played out on tape. And when they got off, you're like, how do they get off? We see it on tape. Like, you're beating this man to death. Like, how do they get off? But there wasn't like a movement from, like a big movement from the players to be outspoken and say anything, because there was a chance that you'd be ostracized. Because at that time in the 90s, you're just now getting into white houses. The audience is, you know, just accepting a black league. You know, you're not far removed from being on tape delay. And so now you have Magic Johnson and Larry Bird sort of pushing it this way. And then Michael Jordan's taken to the next level of popularity to where white people are accepting of black people in their homes on this scale. And so you don't want to, you know, upset that. And I think now they're sort of secure in the fact that, you know, there's a certain type of fan that scratches off that's going to be an NBA fan. They know that the players that they root for are probably going to be outspoken on different issues. And if you have a problem with it, you probably aren't going to watch it. But the league understands that and the players understand that. And I think that's sort of where everything changed. And you have a league like the NBA, which allowed its players to use their voices. But now, once you hit George Floyd, there's just no way you could deny it. I mean, it was in your face for 8 minutes, 46 seconds. And anyone who tries to play dumb now, they're showing who they really are.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I also think there's a level of understanding that even if there are NBA fans who maybe, again, and I always say this, you know, what these guys are campaigning for when it comes to stuff like Jacob Blake and George Floyd, it's not political. We make it political. It's human rights. It's a human rights issue.
Exactly.
But even those who maybe see it politically and disagree, I think now there's an understanding of, okay, I might not agree with what these guys are saying, but I think there are enough fans out there that say, I respect their right to speak on this, and maybe we don't agree politically, but I can still respect their right to do so as a citizen and enjoy, you know, what they do as a player. I think, you know, we've made some progress in that regard. As promised, I do want to talk about the WNBA, and I know Ellen wants to jump in here on this because this is remarkable what they did. You know, Raphael Warnock was the first black senator from the state of Georgia. He was polling at like, what was it, 9%, Ellen? 9%. Before, this is in August, before these players from the Atlanta Dream, the team that Kelly Loeffler partially owns, decided to do these Vote Warnock shirts. Ellen?
Right. So that's what I want to get into. Obviously, we all know the WNBA is always ignored or, you know,
it doesn't have the same profile.
Aside.
It just doesn't.
Yeah.
Right. So for anyone who's listening who is unaware, the Atlanta Dream's co-owner was a Republican Senator Kelly Loeffler, who is currently a senator but was recently ousted. And what she had to say about the Black Lives Matter movement was that it was out of control cancel culture, and that the players of the WNBA are more concerned with playing politics than they are with playing basketball. And this is from, obviously, a co-owner of the WNBA. Yeah. And we can't help but notice how extremely different that is than what the NBA has been putting out there. The WNBA, as I like to say, you know, they didn't get mad. They got even. And they went out and they found a candidate that believed in what they believed in. Because of this, we are now shining a light on the WNBA. And we have athletes like LeBron James, Mookie Betts, who are coming out saying, I'll buy up this team.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to be it? I'll be it. Kelly, get out of here. I want to know your thoughts on how can someone like LeBron James use his platform to help these women be taken more seriously?
Well, I mean, one of the things you saw in the bubble was that orange WNBA sweatshirt, you know, became like the hottest thing to wear. It was like a status symbol to walk around wearing that. And that started a lot with Kobe, you know, who wore one, you know, shortly before his unfortunate passing. And I think he was one of the biggest champions for, you know, WNBA, primarily because of his daughter,
Gigi,
who loved basketball. And Kobe is, you know, rest in peace, you know, he's a great influencer on a lot of these guys. And I mean, but most of these guys, they understand, they respect, you know, these women, they know how hard they work and they know they can play. They know they can ball. You know, one thing about one and done is that these guys go to colleges now. And so they're on these campuses and they see these girls or these women out there hooping and they know they got game. I think they've seen that, a concerted effort from, you know, male athletes, especially NBA players, to say that, you know, these women have game.
They have to deal with racism and sexism, a lot of these.
Yeah. Women. Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're so politically active, because they get it on both ends, right? They get it from male colleagues, and they get it from on a racial level.
They get it from their owners.
Even from an owner.
Yeah, they get it from, yeah. And so I think that's one of the reasons why they've been so involved. I don't know how that's going to translate in terms of popularity for the league. I think that's going to come from just having a fun game to watch. And I think that, you know, anybody that's a fan of basketball can sit there and watch the WNBA and understand that it is quality basketball. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is praise them for what they've done, as mostly as black women, and also encouraging their white counterparts to step up. You know, I had the pleasure of speaking with Sue Bird, you know, about what they did to get Kelly Loeffler ousted. The members of the Players Association basically implored her, "Hey, we need you. We need
she's
a
like
white
the face of the league
to have our back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we need your support on this. We can't just have a bunch of black women saying it. We need you. We need Breonna Stewart. We need all of y'all to have our backs on this." I don't know if you can really connect them in terms of people watching the game and people, you know, and be checking them out from a political standpoint. But I think we can just applaud them. Everybody, you can see that there's a concern and a care, you know, that they put into this as black women, that they're not just going to, you know, sit by idly. You know, you saw what happened with Breonna Taylor. They came out and they had shirts. Everybody wore Breonna Taylor shirts just for Breonna Taylor. That was something that they felt, because they connected to Breonna Taylor as a black woman. So I think the one thing, you just got to just applaud them.
I would even argue that them becoming in quotations political or putting themselves out there would actually turn a lot of people off. And in that sense, you can really see their true colors.
Their courage. Yeah.
They're already playing against the fact that, you know, they're women and they're not as fun to watch and they are not paid as much and they don't get the sponsorships or the commercials that male athletes get. And they're still doing this. So it says, so I think it says so much more to their character and to their courage that they have a smaller platform than these stars like LeBron James or Mookie Betts or whoever has been talking about them. But they made a significant change in a state.
They did. They've made the biggest impact of all for a cause. And I also wanted to talk to you about this one, because I think the WNBA is a great example of this. I can't tell you how many times when an athlete engages in some sort of sports activism, and we saw it here in Boston. The Boston Celtics players did an op-ed in the Boston Globe about basically using facial recognition technology, the use of that, which has become rampant in law enforcement, and how, when you look at it, it is prone to prejudice and misidentification when it comes to Black people. And there were a lot of people on Sports Talk Radio, which I do up here, basically saying, oh, they're focused on the wrong thing. Like, go work on your jump shot instead of working on justice reform. As if you can't do both things. And I think this is what I love about the WNBA. You know, Sue Bird was involved in this, obviously. She helped contribute. She didn't start it, you know, but she helped contribute to it. And if you look at the Seattle Storm in the WNBA Finals, you know, they're wearing the Vote Warnock shirts. They won the championship. You can do both things. You can practice your craft and craft a social justice message. They are not mutually exclusive. And I love the fact that the WNBA helped prove that.
And not only that, I'm just going to jump in here. Like, you're saying, like, you can't do both things, but it's like they're doing it in the most classy, educated. There's no other way to do this respectfully. There's no other way. So when people are saying, like what you were saying earlier, Michael, people are showing their true colors when they have an issue with that. Because if anyone else did it, that's the right way to do it. But these athletes, you know, we just want to, you know, drink a beer and watch some sports and, you know, talk some crap with our friends while we're doing it. You know, we don't want to think about what these men and women actually care about.
Yeah, when I asked, it didn't make it into the story, but I asked Uber, like, why they decided to go after her politically and in her Senate seat, as opposed to just trying to get her out of the WNBA. And she said that she had to take a step back and sort of look at what the situation was. They didn't want to be political pawns. They didn't want to be, they didn't want to attack her and then allow her to become some sort of martyr. Like, oh, look at these players. They're attacking me. And you know, and then she could just use that even more to feed into what she was trying to do. They were like, they didn't say anything, right? They didn't bring up her, you know, they didn't mention her name. You know, they didn't say, don't vote for Kelly Loeffler. They said, vote Warnock. Mm-hmm. And then they went about campaigning for Warnock and so posting on social media for Warnock. And, you know, Kelly Loeffler's still, you know, an owner. She's still in the WNBA, you know, now that she's out of the, you know, the Senate. And, you know, and I asked, you know, does she still have a place in the WNBA? And she was like, why would she want one? You know, because I think that for a lot of these players, you know, they realized that she was being opportunistic in attacking them. Mm-hmm. You know, this was politically convenient for her to go after the WNBA and make them an example, because they know that in the past that she hosted, you know, Stacey Abrams at a Dream Game, mm-hmm. and they honored her there. She's done things in the past that make it, they had a Planned Parenthood night, you know, that she attended, you know, for the Dream.
Yeah.
Can and we just so talk about like the hypocrisy of the fact that a senator has time to be an owner of a basketball team, but basketball players don't have time to be activists?
That's a great point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why the whole stick to sports thing is so stupid, because no one ever tells like a structural engineer, stick to engineering.
Right.
You know? Or, you know,
so you mentioned this before, Michael, the idea of sort of the proper, you know, quote unquote, proper way to protest. It's very interesting to me when I look at the whole Colin Kaepernick thing, how offended people were when he took a knee for the anthem. And yet here you see there are people who are calling themselves patriots who literally are attacking our Capitol building. How do you reconcile that? Because I can't.
Well, it's simple. You know, there's one thing in this country that you can't do, and that's support Black people. Like, you can't come out and push an anti-racist agenda. If that's what you do, prepare to get the backlash. If Colin Kaepernick had taken a knee and said, I'm taking a knee because I am in a fight for cancer, I want to raise awareness for cancer, and I want to, you know, raise money so that we can defeat cancer. Would he have been kicked out of the NFL? Would people have been saying, we don't need you. We don't need you protesting on our time. Would he have been viewed as a pariah around the NFL if he was in a fight for any cause, you know, hurricane relief in Haiti, right? Would he have been kicked out of the league for that? No. What he got kicked out of the league for was because he was speaking up for Black people. And that has been something that's happened throughout the history of this country. When you go that far and you speak up on behalf of trying to, you know, get equality for any group, then you will be punished and you will be made into an example. We have a lot of money that's made off of anti-Blackness. There's a lot to be made. There's a whole economic structure that's built on it. And that's why it always offended me that people were always trying to make excuses for why Colin Kaepernick wasn't in the league and saying, oh, he's not as good a quarterback. He's not this and that. No, he's not in the league because he stepped up for Black people. And it doesn't seem like a lot to ask for.
No.
Until you realize that if equality comes, that means that somebody has to sacrifice something or surrender something in their mind. Right.
In their mind, which is, to me, again, another false narrative. You know, somebody else being treated better doesn't mean that you get treated worse.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, mentally, though, but mentally.
No, you're right. No, I know people feel that way. You're right. Yeah. You're right. That's sort of the whole problem.
But they also understand, like, you know, they say, oh, there's no white privilege. But once that whole thing is threatened, then all of a sudden you want to really, you know, push back and try to, you know, take over the U.S. Capitol once you feel like that happened. And so that there's just some causes that you can get out and fight for. But then there's one in particular. The moment you classify yourself as someone who is supportive of those causes, then you're going to get a lot of backlash for it.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And what's interesting to me, I think it's great that you have this, you know, job at the Post and that they're acknowledging the intersection of sports and society, because for me, it's unavoidable. And there's so many people that look at it and want to separate them and say it's like church and state. And you can't do that. And we haven't been able to do that throughout the course of this country. And as you mentioned with Jackie Robinson, a lot of times sports has been a vehicle for positive societal change. But I still feel, and I'm curious if you feel this way too, that there's almost like a special sort of disdain that some folks reserve for the athletes who speak up. And a lot of other, I think, vocations, Michael, people look at and say, well, you're really talented and you got here through your hard work. So you know, you deserve all this. I mean, obviously we're a capitalistic society, right? So it's like supply and demand. But with athletes, there's always this idea of, well, why are you speaking up? You're so lucky. You're lucky. It's like luck has nothing to do with it. People worked really hard to put themselves in these positions. They worked really hard to get where they are. They're also possessing a talent that very few people on the planet have. So why is it exactly suddenly ascribed to luck and that they should just feel lucky and fortunate to be where they are when we don't do that with other elements of our society?
Yeah. I mean, again, you got to look at who's getting paid and where in your mind do you classify people who look like them?
Yeah.
Like where do they rank? Do you have a caste system in your mind and where do you think they belong? You know, I think that's really the issue. And also one of these things too is that when you root for a team, you feel like you're a part of it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so fans of, you know, you always say, we got to get this win tonight. Oh, what are we going to do today? So you're on that team. And so once there's something that separates you from the team, right, then in some ways the team has been separated. And I think that for a lot of fans, there is disappointment in the fact that you don't see eye to eye on everything. Right. Yeah. You want to beat the Cowboys this weekend, but you for some reason think it's that Black people need equality. And I don't think they do. It's like, well, how about you just be quiet so I can just focus on the fact that you're trying to beat the Cowboys this week and we can just focus on that. I don't want to hear about all this other stuff. Right. And I think that's where a lot of fans, you know, who sort of say, oh, I can't root for him because he believes X, Y, Z. A lot of that is rooted in the fact that that's where the separation comes in that fandom and that unity you have from supporting a team or a player.
Michael, I don't even know if you'll have anything to say to this, but I would just encourage any listener to think about the people that they have supported on sports teams who have been charged with felonies, the ones who have been accused of sexual assault, domestic violence, drug charges, murder. And we kind of seem to overlook that because we want our team to win at the end of the day. But this matter, Black Lives Matter, is what is causing this division and what people are looking at as, Oh, come on.
It's like a red line you can't cross for some folks.
Right. That's the line.
Yes, but again, like I think it's sort of what we hit on earlier. I think people feel like if, you know, you support the Black Lives Matter movement or you support equality, then you support taking something away from me. A lot of people just want to feel like they're better than somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's where their self-esteem is rooted in, is that, well, okay, I might be struggling right now, but at least I'm better than him, or at least I'm better than her. And so when you start to get into the psychology of that and start to really examine, you know, the motivations for a lot of people, that's when you start to gain an understanding and you sort of can even have some level of pity for them that, you know, if we all were on equal footing and we all were, you know, we put in our work and we work hard and we get the same benefits and rewards for our hard work, then that should be something we all strive for. But not everybody wants that. Some people just want to feel like they're better than the next man. And once that whole mindset or that mentality is threatened, then you got to push back in some way. And I think that when you do that, the way, you know, things have been sort of planted over the last couple of years, you feed that, you fuel that. And what you have is thousands of people beating up cops and breaking down the U.S. Capitol because they feel like something is being taken away from them.
No, it's a great point. I mean, look, everybody in America has a right to express their opinion and protest, but there's definitely a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And that was 100% the wrong way. And
so, yeah, overthrowing a government is the wrong way.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Insurrection, sedition. Yeah, that's the wrong way to go about it. So, you know, I just thought Jaylen Brown had a really great quote. It was the night they beat the Miami Heat, which was the same night that the incursion at the Capitol happened. And I thought this was really true. And I sort of want to leave people with this. You know, he said, as athletes, our responsibility is more than just being a basketball player. We're not here to just entertain and then go home. We're members of the community. And I would just encourage people to look at athletes in that way moving forward, because that's very true, first of all, and it really resonates. And that's how they feel. They're members of the community just like you. They have the same rights. Now they have a bigger megaphone. I think with some of that comes some responsibility to make sure you use that in the right way. I think most athletes do. Before we get you out of here, Michael, I do want to ask you, just because of all your NBA experience, what's your take at this point on the NBA and this season that it's going through and what's happening now with COVID? Games canceled due to COVID outbreaks with the Celtics, the Miami Heat, some other teams. Do you think the NBA is at a point where they need to consider a pause here from a health and safety standpoint?
Yeah, I think it's going to be sort of like baseball. You know, with the NFL, you have games every week and you have buys, and like you could sort of get by with how they were doing it. When you have games like Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, to maneuver through this. I think what the league has to accept is that some teams are going to play 72 games if you're going to, you know, do it this way. The bubble doesn't seem like a realistic option because the players who went through it did not enjoy it. You know, that was not a pleasurable experience, you know, for them to be there. It was hard. If you're going to try to play sports during a pandemic, you can have all the protocols in the world in place and you can't avoid it. You know, you really wish that sports had done more to sort of push the rest of the country to sort of fight the disease, as opposed to just saying, well, we'll just provide a distraction. So I think this is sort of just the way it's going to have to be. They're going to have to postpone and cancel games. And then at the end of the year, just see what the highest winning percentages are and then go from there. So that's the challenge you face trying to play sports during a pandemic. And if it gets to the point where, you know, players' lives, you know, are at risk and, you know, people are really in danger, then I think you have to make a change and just say, maybe we don't finish the season at all. I think that's the one thing that, you know, we've sort of been in a denial for, you know, these last couple of months, because we've been able to have sports. We've been able to be entertained.
I would also say, look, it's not like you mentioned, there's no bubble. These guys don't just exist in the NBA. And you can said the same with the NFL. I don't like the COVID shaming of the players, because the reality is they exist in America, which has struggled and done a poor job combating this pandemic. So all the protocols in the world aren't going to prevent them from living in the United States of America.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and that's where we are, especially in some states. It's different. You know, some states, they don't have a mask mandate. Some states, they don't have lockdowns. Some states, you can just walk around and just freely move about as if there is no pandemic. That's one of the challenges that they face. But I think it's also one of the things that the players and the league had to understand once they decided to go about this. A lot of the concerns I had about the bubble are actually playing out now in this season. where you have these catastrophic injuries and you having these, you know, people, you know, coming down with the virus and it's shutting down, you know, what we thought could be a smooth season. But again, I just implore the league. I implore NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, all these sports leagues that have, you know, platforms, they really need to do more to try to spread the message that this virus is serious. And even if the owners don't believe it, even if their players, some of the players don't believe it, they have an obligation that if they're going to try to play sports during this time, they really have to make it clear that, you know, we can't have a daily 9/11 of deaths and just act like it's not there.
Well said. And this will be the last question. I do want to get a little like hardcore hoops in here. So Washington Wizards, Bradley Beal is right now leading the NBA in scoring. He's been tremendous, but he also said, rightfully so, after his team lost to the Celtics last Friday, they can't guard a parked car. He's averaging 35 a game. Do you think Brad Beal finishes the season in Washington? And what's the situation there with the Wizards in terms of his future? Because I think there's a lot of Celtics fans that would be very interested in seeing him unite with his St. Louis homie, Jason Tatum.
Yeah, I think that right now they're 2-8. They just lost their promising center, Thomas Bryant, to a season-ending ACL injury. Russell Westbrook is struggling with his own injuries. So they look like there's not a lot of hope there. And I think one of the things that Bradley Beal always wanted was to have his own team and so to be the man and to be in his position. But he's in his position. He's getting a lot of points. He's not getting a lot of notoriety necessarily because of it, because his team is losing. And so at some point, he's going to have to make a decision, you know, about what he wants out of his career. Does he want to just get 30 points a game on a team that's going nowhere? Or does he want to go and be a part of something that's special and try to win a championship? I think overall, he's a guy who's been to the postseason before. So even if the Wizards were able to turn it around and make it to the playoffs, what does that actually accomplish? He's not any closer than he was when he had John Wall as his backcourt mate. And so I think that the frustration of getting a lot of points, losing a lot of games, I think it will reach a point where he'll have to say, you know what, for the best, for the betterment of this franchise and for the betterment of my career, I think it's best that we part ways.
Yeah, that's a great point, especially as he enters the prime of his career. All right, great knowledge from Michael Lee, dropping knowledge on all facets of the NBA here. And I think it's great that the Washington Post has the job. They've created the job that you have because there's so much at the intersection of sports and society. So that's Michael Lee of the Washington Post. He's the sports enterprise reporter for the Post, focusing on the intersection of gender, diversity, and how sports shape our society. You can catch him on Twitter at Mr. Michael Lee. Michael, thanks for joining us here on the Take 5 Pod.
Hey, man, thanks for asking me to come on. I really enjoyed being on.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 Podcast. As always, you can catch the Take 5 Podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget, we want you to go on there, subscribe, rate. It helps other people find the podcast. We'll catch you next time.